Hello and welcome to DAC Beechcroft's Lawcast. I'm Sarah Meyer, a knowledge lawyer in the Employment, Pensions and Immigration team. And in this first episode of our series of four podcasts about the Employment Rights Bill, I'm talking to partners David Speakman and Stuart Craig about the proposals to make protection from unfair dismissal a day one right, change the trigger point for collective redundancy consultation, strengthen rights to statutory sick pay, and create a new single enforcement body for employment rights. So kicking off then with what is, I think, one of the flagship proposals in the Employment Rights Bill, and that is making protection from unfair dismissal a day one right. David, could you explain what that's going to look like in practice?
Well, Sarah, as you say, it's definitely the flagship. It's the one that's got an awful lot of press coverage. But I wonder if some people might be a little bit disappointed at not quite what they'd anticipated. What we've definitely got is a repeal of the 2 years qualifying service currently required to bring a standard unfair dismissal claim, but it will be subject to a probationary period. So the Labour manifesto document, Plan to Make Work Pay, always talked about probationary periods during which a lower level of protection would apply. The bill and the accompanying next steps to make work pay policy paper refers to the probationary period. It actually calls it an initial period of employment. But what is absolutely clear is that there will be a lower level of protection during that initial period, that probationary period. We don't yet know how long the probationary period will run for. That's going to be subject to consultation. Governments expressed a preference for it to be a 9-month probationary period. And we also don't know what the process will be for dismissal during that probationary or initial period. There'll be consultation on that as well. But there's been suggestion that the process might be as simple as just a single meeting with the employee to explain the employer's concerns. Probably the employee will have the right to be accompanied at that meeting by their trade union official or a colleague. There's going to be a lot of consultation on how long the probationary period is going to be, what the process will be for dismissal during that probationary period, and also on levels of compensation. It's also suggested that compensation for those dismissed unfairly during the probationary period will be set at a lower level than the current unfair dismissal cap.
Thanks, David. And Stuart, will this lower level of protection during the initial probationary period apply to all dismissals during that period then?
The short answer to that is no. As David has already explained, the government's next steps documents states that there'll have to be some sort of basic process followed in order for the lower level protection to be triggered. But also from what we know, there are going to be some time constraints as well as to when employers can look to implement such a process. And as David's already explained, there's this sort of reference to an initial or probationary period. But in order to benefit from the lower protection, an employer would have to ensure that a dismissal takes effect either during that initial or probationary period, whatever that is going to be, or that notice is given during that period and the dismissal takes effect within 3 months of the end of that period. So there's going to be some time constraints, we think, in relation to when the process can be implemented. The other thing is sort of slightly surprising is that the bill actually states that the lower level of protection during this initial stroke probationary period will only apply to dismissals for certain specified reasons, and they are conduct, capability, illegality, or some of the substantial reason, SOSR. And you will have noted, I didn't say redundancy. That is the case, that it seems that even if an employee is within their initial probationary period and they are made redundant, then the fairness of the dismissal would be judged against the normal standard, regardless of their length of service. So employers who, in the past, who have used last in, first out as a quick and easy selection criteria for short servers to look to reduce numbers within the workforce quite quickly, will have to give consideration, a careful consideration, as to whether that is going to be a risky strategy going forward. And it certainly seems that that will be the case. And therefore, as I say, they'll have to give consideration as to and people who are redundant, given the day one rights that they are going to gain in terms of redundancy.
Gosh, well, overall, that sounds like a pretty significant change. So what will the impact be on employers of all of this?
Well, it is a significant change. I mean, there's no getting away from that. But I think what we do need to remember is that employees haven't always needed 2 years service to qualify for unfair dismissal protection. In fact, qualifying service has fluctuated up and down, being as low as 6 months and as high as 2 years, broadly depending upon the government. Labour governments have generally reduced and Conservative governments have generally increased the amount of time somebody has to be employed before they get protection. So, you know, with a 9 month period, albeit that during that 9 month period there is still protection for employees that they have to go through a process, that's not as low as it has been in the past, where employees only needed 6 months employment in order to get unfair dismissal protection. But it is a big change. We shouldn't move away from that, and it will have, I think, a large impact on employers. You know, what we are going to see here is many employers currently don't do anything, don't have any process in place, don't follow any process within the 2 years of protection, the 2 years prior to gaining protection for unfair dismissal. So there's no meetings, etc. They are going to have to run some meetings, although we don't know what those are at the moment. Obviously, as employment lawyers, we also know that even where somebody has got more than 2 years service and the employer follows a fair process, having meetings, going through a fair dismissal process, that still results in sometimes in claims. I think we'll probably see the same with this new condensed process during the probationary period. There might be meetings, there will be a process at least, but that won't stop employees saying that the process was unfair and still bringing unfair dismissal claims. So I think what we are going to see is probably an increase in the number of tribunal claims. And that could be quite problematic. The tribunal system is already under an awful lot of pressure. I think several tribunals have never got back up to speed fully post-COVID. And whilst claims should be dealt with in 6 months, many are taking 12 or 18 months. So I think there's going to be an awful lot of pressure on the tribunal period going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as we know, the government haven't said anything at all yet about whether the tribunal can expect additional resource to deal with the potential increase in claims that this change will involve. I mean, how long have we got really until the change comes in? How long have tribunals got to try and get on top of things with or without any extra resource?
So thankfully for the tribunals and employers, there's quite a long lead time. The government have confirmed that this change won't take effect until at least the earliest before autumn 2026. The one thing we don't know, though, is exactly who it will apply to when it does come into force. So, for example, will it only apply to new joiners who start on or after the date the change takes effect? Or will it also cover employees who've already started at that point but haven't yet got 2 years service? Usually legislation doesn't have a retrospective effect, but potentially that could provide for a slight quirk and a nuance and a strange two-tier sort of workforce with those who have rights, who started after the changes took effect, and those who don't, who started before they took effect. So we may see some further regulations that set out some transitional provisions to address this specific question. Because, as I say, it just seems on the face of it unfair for someone to have started before the new provisions came into force to have less protection than a colleague who started after them.
Right. And I mean, there's certainly a lot that we're still waiting for. But is there anything that employers could or should be doing now to get themselves ready to prepare for the change?
I mean, it's certainly worth taking time now for employers to assess their recruitment processes and think about, are they robust? Are they getting the right people in? Are they getting the people in who will hit the mark from day one? That will definitely be worth time well spent. Also, in a little bit of time, once we know a little bit more about the new legislation, employers will want to make sure that their contractual probationary periods match up with the new statutory initial period or the statutory probationary period. But at the moment, we don't know what that period's going to be. The statutory period could be 9 months. It might be less. It might be more. So that's something just to keep in mind for the near future.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, the government's fact sheet about the proposed change talks about the possibility of employers retaining the ability to operate separate contractual probationary periods of any length they choose. Would employers really want to have a probationary period in their contract that's different from the statutory period? Is there any benefit to them in doing that?
That's right. So the government's fact sheet about the proposed changes to the law on unfair dismissal does note that employers will retain the ability to operate separate contractual probationary periods of any length they choose, and will still be able to dismiss employees fairly for failing probation beyond the statutory initial stroke probationary period. But such dismissals will then be governed by the normal law on unfair dismissal rather than by the lighter touch regime that will apply during the statutory and initial probationary period of employment. So having longer contractual probationary periods will probably have limited use, but they probably are still going to be helpful for employers in relation to, say, very senior executives who have long contractual notice periods.
Okay, so a lot to think about there. Is there anything else that we should be bearing in mind on this particular change?
Yeah. Just a couple of things. An employee will only be able to claim ordinary unfair dismissal if they're dismissed after they've started work. However, if the claim is for automatically unfair dismissal, to which of course, no qualifying period currently applies, for example, discrimination, whistleblowing, or asserting a statutory right, then the employee will not need to have started work in order to bring the claim. Also, the government is proposing to remove the 2-year qualifying service requirement in respect of the right to request written reasons for dismissal. Instead, this right will apply from the end of the statutory initial probationary period, except where dismissal takes place during pregnancy, maternity leave, or adoption leave, where there is already no qualifying service requirement in those circumstances.
Thanks, Stuart. So moving on now from the unfair dismissal changes to another one of the biggies, the proposed change to collective redundancy consultation requirements, also likely to be quite significant for employers. What exactly will this involve?
So it's perhaps worth just reminding ourselves of what the current position is. So under the current law, employers that are proposing to make redundancies are required to run a collective consultation process if they're proposing to dismiss 20 or more employees at one establishment within a 90-day period. And this question of what is an establishment has been the subject of an awful lot of case law. Broadly, it means a unit at which the employees are assigned to carry out their work. So that's 20 at a unit rather than 20 redundancies across the company. And famously, when Woolworths went under, the tribunal that held that each Woolworths store broadly was a separate establishment. It occurred to me that some of our listeners won't actually remember Woolworths. It was a really totally eclectic shop where you could get everything from like a lawnmower to a DVD. But I mean, what I remember it best for, and I'm sure lots of other people listening will as well, was they had the absolute best pick and mix. But look, I digress. What was key about Woolworths is there was one on pretty much every high street. And so rather than collectively consulting about whether or not there are 20 or more dismissals proposed across the company, Woolworths only had to consult where there were 20 or more proposed dismissals at a particular shop. The bill proposes removing the reference to dismissals being at one establishment. So employers will have to consult more frequently. They will have to consult whether proposing of making 20 or more redundancies anywhere across their company.
So having to consult more frequently, I mean, that sounds like it might impose a bit of a burden on employers. Is there anything that they should be doing now to get themselves ready for this?
Yes, look, given that the change increases the likelihood that employers will have to consult collectively, employers should look at what employee representative bodies currently exist so that they know who they will be consulting with. You know, for example, recognised trade unions, existing employee forums, and actually maybe there needs to be some consideration of whether existing forums need to be streamlined or updated and revised. And actually, for those who don't have recognised trade unions or existing employee forums, should they be established or actually should there even be a case of considering union recognition? But they also should put in place processes to ensure that different bits of the business communicate about any proposed dismissals to avoid inadvertent non-compliance and potential protected award risk. That's likely to include introducing a requirement for all proposed redundancies to be reported to a certain central team who have responsibility for assessing whether collective consultation is required.
So quite a lot of prep for employers then. How long have they got to do that?
Again, hopefully a long lead time, and the government have stated that the implementation date's likely to be during the course of 2026.
Right, and is there anything else that we want to flag to employers on this proposal now?
Yeah, there is quite another large consideration for employers, Sarah. And there was a consultation paper put out last night on the 21st on this, and that's to lift the cap on the award that can be paid to employees. So currently, for a failure to consult, employees can be awarded up to 90 days actual pay. Government is consulting on increasing that cap of 90 days. And the two options look to be either increasing it from 90 days to 180 days or removing the cap completely. And government's also seeking views on whether interim relief should be available to employees who bring claims for a protective award.
And also another thing to flag, David, is that something that sort of sneaked under the radar a little bit, we're just looking at this morning from the consultation paper that the government released last night, is that the paper states that the government is going to or intends to gather further views on strengthening the collective redundancy framework in 2025. And that includes consideration of doubling the minimum consultation period when an employer is proposing to dismiss 100 or more employees from 45 days to back to 90 days. So that's something that we weren't anticipating, but we've noticed that it is in the consultation paper that has been released.
Yeah, almost as a footnote in the sort of very final paragraph of that consultation paper. So, and potentially a really huge development and something that could sort of massively benefit employees, but also significantly increase burdens on employers. So one to watch this space over for sure. So moving on from that potentially enormous change to another right that is one to benefit employees, and that has been highlighted, how it's been expressed in all of the documentation, is becoming a day one right, and that's the right to statutory sick pay. So what is being changed here, how will it work, and when's it likely to take effect?
That's right. So currently, employees only become entitled to statutory sick pay on their fourth consecutive day of sickness. The first 3 days are considered to be waiting days. The bill will remove this waiting period. So employees will get SSP from their first day of illness. The bill also brings more people into the scope of receiving SSP entitlement, as it removes the lower earnings limit of £123 a week that employees currently have to meet to qualify for SSP. It's likely that employees who normally earn less than the current rate of SSP receive some sort of lower rate than the standard rate. And on the 21st of October, the government launched a consultation on what that applicable rate will be. The consultation paper suggests a range of options from 60%, which is cited as the lowest rate that the government's internal modelling suggests would not leave employees worse off, to 80%, which is the rate that was initially proposed when the idea of removing the lower earnings limit for SSP eligibility was first floated back in 2019. Again, in terms of implementation, the government have suggested that this is likely to take effect at some point during 2026.
Thanks, Stuart. And what do we think the likely practical impact of this change will be for employers?
I don't think there'll actually be that much of any impact at all for employers that offer company sick pay. I mean, in my experience, company sick pay already triggers mostly on day one of a person's illness. I think employers who only offer statutory sick pay, though, may see an increase in the use of sick pay for the odd day or two off. The moment employees don't get statutory sick pay, if they just have one day off or a couple of days. So there may be an increase in that sort of sickness absence. And I suppose, but what can employers do about that? Well, I think the thing is to look at their attendance management policies and make sure that the trigger levels are appropriate. For example, you know, for return to work meetings, to make sure that people are genuinely sick when they're taking time off under this enhanced benefit.
Absolutely. So on our last topic for this this episode, we are taking a quick look at the promised new single enforcement body that the government say will take charge of the enforcement of employment rights. What do we know about this body at this stage?
Yes, this is one of the things of the bill that's had a lot of attention even before the bill came out. The bill gives the government the power to create a single labour market enforcement body, which is something that we haven't had in the past. The Next Steps document indicates that this new body will be known as the Fair Work Agency, and it will take over the functions of the various different existing enforcement bodies, covering national wage, statutory sick pay, modern slavery, and it will also be given responsibility for enforcing rights to holiday pay. The precise remit and powers of the Fair Work Agency are still to be determined, for example, in terms of what its investigative powers will be, and whether it will be able to issue and enforce fines for breaches, and we're not sure how much funding it will receive. What we do know is that the government are keen for this agency to have the right to gain access to employers' property and remove documents if it is considered appropriate to do so. But there's an awful lot to work through with this, and trying to work out how this interacts with the employment tribunal system that exists for employees and look to enforce their employment's rights. In terms of when this is likely to come into being, again, the government have said that at some point in 2026, but actually even maybe even beyond that. So we're not, you know, it's very much watch this space, and it'll be interesting to see in terms of consultation what kickback employers give the government on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So much to watch this space about. So thank you both very much. We've, I think, covered a lot in a fairly short space of time, and there's plenty more on the horizon for employers. So we will be discussing more of the bill's proposals in the second episode of this series in a couple of weeks' time. For now, thank you, everyone.